Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, monthly album roundup for the month of August 2021. I am your host, Robert, and thankfully this episode won't drag on longer than a certain couple of albums that came out this past month, hopefully. And with me I have...
Boozy and the Baby. Boy, this sure does suck for us. Can't get any worse. Nicki Minaj. Hold my Tucker.
And...
Oh, fine, we're doing this. And that's going to stop us now for doing this. Why is there a bear in here? And why is he wearing flannel? Why is he a samurai?
Look, it's fine. He's just doing TikTok trends. Top of the morning. It's fine. Hi, TikTok trend bear.
What do we feed him?
I don't fucking know. Why don't we feed him those, like, purposefully gross dishes that people make in order to get attention on viral videos?
I wouldn't want the bear to go through that. Y'all white people need us to... Okay, white people, when you wash chicken, don't fucking use Dawn.
Or the toilet. Then again, you have to realize that half of these people doing this... Well, most of them anyway, are part of some secret network of videos that are probably being managed by some, like, magician trying to get clout on social media or something. I'm half kidding. I vaguely remember reading an article that connected all of these purposefully gross-out viral food video things to, like, a video network managed by, like, one or two people. And, yeah, I admit, it works. Unfortunately, it gets clout and attention, because I... The fucking internet works like that. I cannot believe it. But we're not here to talk about people making sorbets in their toilets. We're here to talk about music. And, August was a month that happened. Good thing we're finally getting around to this now, because that, truth be told, I am a person who's very dependent on, like, consistent schedules, and I hate when things interrupt routine, you know? That's just a little bit frustrating for me psychologically, but we're here now. That's what matters. And there were some albums here and there to listen to. So, might as well start the way we always do with our little recap of some of the more notable things that dropped in the past month of August. Starting with some of the stuff that came out, you know, before the first formal Friday. Starting in August 1st, there was a new EP from Johan Johansson. I believe a posthumous one, called Gold Dust. And then on August 3rd, we had a project from Ty Segall called Harmonizer. Then we get into August 6th, 2021. Your big releases this week were Tinashe, Where You At, with 333. Nas, with the King's Disease 2. RZA, with RZA vs. Bobby Digital, one of two Bobby Digital-based projects he's supposed to be working on. There were a couple of solo projects from Serge Tankian as part of his Cinematique series, one called Illuminate and the other called Violent Violins. And last but certainly not least, the newest album from Lingua Ignota with Sinner Get Ready. Then going on to the next week, August 13th, 2021, we had the newest album from the band Quicksand with Distant Populations. We had the newest EP from deathcore band Lorna Shore with And I Return to Nothingness. We had The Killers with the new project Pressure Machine. We had a new Iggy Azalea album, The End of an Era. Let's hope that title is in fact very literal. We had a new project drop from Brownsville rapper Ka with A Martyr's Reward. Of course, there was the new Boldy James and the Alchemist project, their second full-length album, third collaborative project overall, with Bo Jackson. Now, moving on to August 20th, 2021, we had a new project from metal band Wolves in the Throne Room with Primordial Arcana. In the surprise musical sequel of the year, Between the Buried and Me, coming back with their newest studio album, Colors 2. From the band Death Heaven, we had their newest album, Infinite Granite. Switchfoot, who is apparently still a thing, dropped the stupidly titled Interrobang. And speaking of ridiculous titles, we had I'm trying to see if I read this right, because it said side A with a side B coming soon. We had a side A for the new West Side Gun project. Hitler wears Hermes 8. Sincerely, Adolf. Oh, okay. Look, Gun, I like you, but why? There was, of course, Trippie Redd with his newest studio album, Trip at Night. Sturgill Simpson delving more into bluegrass with his newest album, The Ballad of Dude and Juanita. And last but certainly not least, the newest studio album from Lorde with Solar Power. On August 27th, but more specifically, one release that came out the day before as a surprise on August 26th, there was a new EP from Gorillaz with Meanwhile. Now, moving on to August 27th proper, we had the newest studio album from the band Ginger with Wallflowers. We had a prog band Leprous with their newest project Aphelion. Hardcore band Turnstile with their newest album Glow On. We had Churches with their newest album Screen Violence. Halsey, for some reason, with If I Can't Have Love, I Want Power. And then the last big release of the month, after much anticipation? Air quotes? Is that... I don't think that's the right word here, but it only applies by technicality. Yeah, Kanye West with his new album, Donda. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a month. There was some good. There was some bad. There was also Kanye, which is in some other kind of dimension. But now to not waste any time and actually delve more into detail on the albums that are either worth your while or just straight up, you know, ignoring. As always, we kick it over to Alex to get the ball rolling here.
Yeah. Just a heads up, though, before we get started, I just want to give an update on the VMAs for this year. 3 million viewers across 10 plus channels.
And how much of a dip is that from last year?
It's a significant dip. And it's also, just from MTV, only 900,000 viewers by itself.
Well then.
Yet another all-time low. Shows how irrelevant this show has become to television as a whole.
Come on, let this be the nail in the coffin. Big money, big money, big money, no whammies.
I hope so. Yeah, now I can get started with the albums I picked out. Starting with the latest from the Lost Not Forgotten archive from Dream Theater. It's something I actually have. It's the Train of Thought demos. It's basically what I said it is. It's the demos, the instrumental demos for the Train of Thought album. It's very good, very heavy. Interesting takes with how it compares to the full album version. And it's available on CD and vinyl for the first time ever. First time on CD since like 2000 and something. I don't know when that CD originally came out. But yeah, if you're into getting those sets, there you go. There's another one to pick up. And I'm just going to throw this in here just because I can. Stephen Wilson dropped the deluxe edition digital box set of The Future Bites, so, hey, it's another reason for me to listen to that album again. I'll take it. And now for the ones I actually did listen to, mostly all the way through in the case of this one. Did you all know that Megadeth recorded a live acoustic concert on CD back in 2001?
No. Why would you tell me this?
I have bad news for you. They did. It was a show recorded at a bar in Boston in 2001. It was only released on CD for their fan club. And it has since been given a wide release for some reason. It's just called Unplugged in Boston. And, well, it's Megadeth in 2001. It's kind of not their best time since they were still trying to wash the stink of Risk off of them with The World Needs a Hero.
Oh, God.
Note that I said trying to. Ugh. Didn't quite work out because by this point in time, Marty Friedman fucked off to Japan and he hasn't been back since, and good for him. He made a whole new career out of that. So, yeah, just as a timestamp, this was the last real true period for Megadeth before it became a Dave Mustaine solo project, and the world's been worse off because of it, and yeah, anyway, this album sounds like it was lifted from a radio broadcast that has a bunch of white noise in the background. I don't recommend it. It's not great.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Dave. I hope you're learning up on all those real-world issues that you're very confused about.
Yeah. Fucking Dave.
Yeah. All right. And now for something that honestly deserved a mention in here. The soundtrack of Borderline Forever.
You mean from Scott will eventually take a look at the first Mega Man Wozniak parentheses working title?
The very same. And yeah, we're all big fans of this guy from Toledo that some of you out there may have heard of. Scott the Woz guy. And the 200th episode of his show about stupid Nintendo games, Borderline Forever, now has a full soundtrack to it with a lot of great arrangements from Nicholas Carr and Garrett Williamson, two of his musical collaborators. And while Scott may not have a single musical bone in his body, he's not that bad of a singer on these tracks. Like on Closing In, which is what happens when you put him in a solid post-grunge style track. It's pretty killer. And there are the fantastic background tracks as well, like the opening, the moment when the Green Bay Packers arrive, the instrumental cuts, the insert songs, the intro music, where all the video game YouTubers are showing up to watch him talk. And there's that preview song from the trailer, which is kind of like a little medley of everything we've heard from the series so far with tracks from this episode as well. It's a fun little soundtrack compilation. Yeah, and these guys do some fantastic work. It's always great when they work with Scott in his various colorblind misadventures in space.
Madden 08.
Yep, Madden 08. All right. Now for this next one. Screen violence from Churches. This is definitely more of a focus on synth-driven electronic power pop. And I think with this album, I finally get what this group is going for. And just hearing You Still Matter in the opening track asking for a friend just feels good. This whole album just has a load of vibes to it that I've never really found from this band before, which is kind of ironic with the context of why this album is called Screen Violence, and some of the contents of the songs themselves carrying a sense of melancholia while sounding uplifting in a strange sense. This whole album came out of a sense of struggle, but it's presented in a way that takes away the negativity of that struggle and redirects it into strive for fighting. And it's all presented in a very lush fashion. Again, very synth-heavy power pop. It's good. I like it. This is the kind of, you know, modern pop I'm into. So, yeah, I think I finally get Churches now, and I like what I'm hearing. If they can keep going with more of this, that would be fantastic. It's very pleasant. It's very good. Alright, now for this new Ginger album, Wallflowers. Do you like the stylings that Ginger supplies the metal genre with? And you're going to get a whole album of that, with loose and free-flowing drum grooves applying a strong syncopated rhythm, with a chunky guitar riff, smooth bass lines, and those to-and-fro vocal deliveries from Tatiana. A special note goes to the bass intro on Wallflower. It's such a swell groove with its clean verse. And now for Infinite Granite from Deaf Heaven. As a whole, I can say that I do like it, and I like the more shoegaze and post-rock aesthetics that this album has going for it. But that comes with this album sounding very lucidly serene, that it might just put me to sleep, but in a good way? I don't know how else to describe it. It's not boring sleep, it's calming sleep. Not sure if that was the intention, but that's what I got out of it. I mean, I had to have a cup of coffee at 5 o'clock in the afternoon while I was taking down my nose. It was starting to take its effect on me. Mm. Yeah, there's the ending sequences of great mass of color and that final bit of villain that get a bit harsh with the vocal delivery, but the bulk of this album just sounds nice. Nice in that put it on when you go to bed and get 8 hours of sleep relaxing kind of way. But credit where it's due, the ending of Mombasa is the most frantic moment of the whole album, so... I mean... I don't know. I might have to give it a couple more listens through to get a better understanding of what this is trying to do for me. Oh, well. And now for the big one for me. Seemingly out of nowhere, we have a new album from North Carolina's own Between the Buried and Me, a sequel to their 2007 album Colors, called, Colors 2.
As you would. I mean, are they going to call it Colors 2.5?
Yeah, and off the bat, it follows the structure of the first album with a soft piano intro and monochromes leading to a heavier hook section and go into the double helix of Extinction and just give a colossal barrage of kinetic energy out. The initial impression that I would get from the first two tracks is that this is the band looking back on their past heights and recontextualizing it into their more modern musical and song structure, acknowledging their past and bringing it to the present. I mean, the second track even has the line, "Nature seeps into concrete. It's up to us to reshape this course between the buried and me."
Hey! It's like that band that does those things.
Yeah. And that leads right into the two singles, Revolution in Limbo and Fix the Error, which have more of their more modern stylings on full display and drum solos. "Break Free from the May," screams Tommy Rogers. And the first epic of the album, Never Seen Future Shock, combines both the more aggressive side of the band with a more melodic side, going from growling out, "The exterior world seeps in quicker than it used to calmly singing, "We will never be at peace with ourselves until we separate ourselves." The great guitar lead in the background, but you can't tell that this song is about, 2020 problems, you know?
Ah, God, that year.
Yeah, especially with it going to this harder halftime groove with Tommy growling out, "Trapped in our geometric nests of not giving a fuck. We are initially fed the same fears, the ants on our backs they have dropped from the sky." Before calming down in the final section, lifting corrode, the beginning, fade as time marches on, before reprising that melodic chorus from earlier on. The song alone is just has a great arrangement. It's just fantastic work here. And that's only the fifth track of this 80-minute album. Staring to the Abyss shortens things up a little bit going forward. It has a nice cinematic intro to serve as its hook to lead into a more swift, harsh vocal passage verse. "Embrace these memories we never regret. To go right into prehistory. It has a good noodling guitar lick and maybe a mandolin as well. I heard something in the back. I'm wondering what that was. That's how it starts off. It's another shorter track that also has some vaudeville-esque whimsy that was in Automata 2, complete with blast beats playing in reverse and cartoon sound effects, which is always a good combination. Just a short bit of fun before Bad Habits comes on with its organ lick and dueling guitar harmonies. Might sound like it was lifted from Coma Ecliptic, maybe? And then we get to "The Future Is Behind Us." It has more of a serene presence to it for its first section anyway, as the second one kicks off with some fun drum sample bits, a guitar and keyboard accent passage that sounds like it was taken from the Emerson Palmer track Tarkus, and the
Yeah, God. I had to pause and rewind to make sure I heard that right.
Yeah. Dream Theater takes an old Wilson sound bit. These guys take a bit from The Secret of My Success. It's wonderful. Yeah, and that goes on before we get to a more syncopated start-stop groove section that can be explained as 2020 brain problems. It gets more aggressive as it pushes through with the line, "Sink away from your nourishment. as it's being screamed out with, sorry for the last year of bringing you down, my mind is to blame, to lead into Turbulent. That starts with 80 cents? Yeah, it does. And it does sound a bit more at ease at first, despite the title serving as a bit of a calmer companion to the previous track before going into a more bit-crushed, I would say, final passage. Their eyes follow you open the closed-off circle to go into an instrumental interlude, Sfumato, a term that translates into colors transitioning. These folks are clever. They're very clever. And it leads into the closing epic of the album, Human as Hell, Another One with Love. And yes, it starts off with a similar grooving passage as White Walls did, clearly done by design, leading to, 15 minutes of prog metal amazement. So it's not really White Walls Part 2, since it goes off into its own thing with the hills and valleys of aggression and calm, and leading out into an outro that's as much triumphant as it is, yep, this is it, with the line, sing with me, for today is gone, completing this grand project. And I can say, yeah, this is the best album from these guys since Coma Ecliptic, maybe even since Parallax 2. And it's another contender for year-end top 5 honors for me. Fantastic. Alright, now I guess we'll take a look at what's coming out in October. Oh, Jesus, goddamn, criminy. There's so much coming out in October. And this month, too.
Just, you know, why did they have to do all this now?
It's gonna be a tight race to the finish. I'll just say that.
I swear to God, if I could make a joke right now. I could say something like, if Death Grips dropped something in December or something. But if I say that out loud, that's probably going to happen at this rate, because what isn't coming out this year?
Ugh. Jesus. Yeah. So yeah, and so ends my opening diatribe, and now it's time for me to prepare for the next 2 months of everything. Good lord.
Batten down the hatches. So, yeah, with that first part out of the way, now we throw it over to our friend Mark, who, I'm not gonna make the usual joke here, because I know there's no way he didn't, I know there's no way he sat through fucking Dante. He did not.
No, I did not. And because during the release, something went broke, as I already told y'all.
Yeah.
Just
as a note, an hour and a half of Kanye is too much Kanye.
Shit, 20 minutes of Kanye is probably too much Kanye.
That's why Kid See Ghost is perfect. It's like 10 minutes of Kanye and 10 minutes of Cudi.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I didn't understand Drake either, so yeah, to get that out of the window. However, like y'all who found y'all album of the year contenders already, I think I found mine. Starting with these two albums. First up, a returning old favorite. It's sort of Kazona time, I guess. With Bodie James and the Alchemist, with Bo Jackson. I'm very forward to this. And last album, I did have plenty of time to go all the tracks in. When I find. I'm really liking this shit a lot. Like the way the first starts out with this track, I'm gonna say like during that, you know, the album content, which is basically, you know, really him, you know, like he's a storyteller. He tells all about, you know, basically, you know, coke rap, the drug game, all that shit, which seems like Monday, but the way he delivers it is always so nonchalant, and it's routine for him, which you kind of get. Also, there's a little sports reference thrown in there, considering, you know, his name after a football player / baseball player who last check was from Best from Alabama. I did not know that till now. What do you expect? I don't know shit about sports that much.
Hmm.
Okay, Okay, so anyway, so let's double check with a double hockey sticks. Which thing could start the album? Considering it's all slow, but then we get that beat switch though. That shit just got me hooked. Like I was loving that beat switch when it first came. Like a man and a half in there. Like this is really fucking great. And because it got some usual cult rap bars like tracks like EPMD. Yeah, by the way, in case you're wondering. And I checked name EPMD. Yeah, stay tuned for that shit. I'll explain that later. And then the text like Rick Martin Montana with being the butcher, which is always a woman feature because they getting that hard shit as always. As always with him, yeah. And then get a favorite track of another track of my other album, Photographic Memories, which had got this very excellent sample loop that just carried through this eerie mournful vibe that makes it a fucking good instrumental in that album. And the verses and the guitar from Earl Sweatshirt and Rock Marciano made more better. Like, mostly the vivid memories of how deals go on the street, or mostly in Earl's case, kind of depression. I mean, kind of depression, like, or something like that. Like, his verse go like, niggas from the Grammys now, five-star living, on a five-star jamming out, high-spec magic, sticking out an arm as they standing down, criminal and stamping, speaking out Jackson style. See, sports references, but yeah, that song and that beat is just works so well for me. And it like this album has a healthy list of features. Like I mentioned Benny earlier, I mentioned Rock and Earl earlier. Like you got the rapper Stove Got Cooks, which you will hear a lot on this on my part later on, doing the chorus on the track Diamond Dallas. I love the way he do the chorus, because it's got this old man boost there, like I'm just on the stove, like oh, that's like so like that. And then we get like a mini Fade reunion with the track Fake Flowers, which boy collabs with both Currency and Freddie Gibbs on this track, which got this so like this lavish styles type of shit that I was always known for when he does some shit like this. I think it's worth saying high so far, you nigga fuck them kids. I ain't your mentor or your role model. and also check that out, like their Illegal Search and Seizure. Like that's had one of the best beats I heard. I mean on that track. The problem I got with the song is it's too damn short. Like it's like two minutes, but it's like 2 minutes. Like it's like that could have been longer. Like I wouldn't mind hearing more instrument. Like that just got me going. It's going places. Like going does that back and forth. Like during many listens, and see how I like it more. Like and see if I like it more. Which tell me, I do. I do still like it. Maybe not as much as the presidency in China. I mean, I did got. Oh, to be fair, that was in February of last year. I got more listens out of that. This is what in August, and I'm just getting through it. But yeah, like I think this is gonna be pretty much like an album contender if it listens get to me, they're good because I do dig the hell out of this album. Man. And once again, Boydie James does a damn good job on his bars. Alchemist still kills the game with production. And I think, well, like, okay, I know like last year when Alchemist got out of the year, when people talk about Alchemist, they talk more Freddie Gibbs from Joint Freddie than Boydie James, which they're both good projects. Although I think with this. And maybe in this, and Arm & Hammer wouldn't be that. I think more. I don't know. Arm & Hammer might have more attention since that's. I mean, then again, Arm & Hammer is more indie. But either way, this album still got. I still dig the hell this album. And now the next project, the one that I wish I could have reviewed but couldn't do to either. I don't know when it was streaming and the other thing. Ka. A Martyr's Reward. Now, I'll say this about this album when I go in, is that this is like usually when it comes to car albums, they have a theme or something theme, like Ready to Be Christianity or Greek Mythology or Samurai or Chess. It's scaled back a bit. Like, there's not really a clear clear, you know, clear thing with that. Like, it's basically, I mean, it is basically like what he always been talking about. We always been talking about, like, basically, he turned to his life, which is okay. Like, it's usual thing. Like, he's always quiet, he's subdued, he always, okay, not whisper rap, but more like silent. I mean, silent, and it's more, and it's, you know, very, you know, subdued, drumless beats, which I still dig. Which is the thing I like. Like, I always dig that thing about Kyle, is that his voice carries more on the production, that helps him more. And on here, he talks about how, like, he is a, how his status in hip hop in his whole community, you know, how it's coming to him, and he just goes on about, you know, stuff like on track I Need That. He talks about how like he got everything that's been stolen from black people, which is a lot. And then get that. Don't get moves where he talks about how like you can feel the entire tone in the song, peace. Where he goes about seeking peace throughout all the shit happening around his life. And I kind of dug through that shit. And I do like this one more. I noticed what he talk about. Top scouts under a microscope to make sure we see sales. Remember, my first vitamin was iron, but I won the B12. You get that?
Ah.
Yeah. You get that? Yeah. More than that, like, you know, I won't say much have changed in here. Like, he still writes what he does best. I mean, the lack of a theme doesn't really downgrade to me. It's still got all the storytelling and things that I always like about Ka when he raps, and that's what the hell is. Like, I don't know, it'll be top album of the year. It's still good. Like, he even got some good news going with Jack Soto, which is produced by Preservation, and he's teamed up with Navy with producer Navy Blue for We Live in / Barter, which Navy Blue did got a verse on there, which helps well. But yeah, during the end of this album, yeah, I mean, I can say Kyle still does what he does best. So I feel like his style, I feel like his rapping, which I definitely dug the hell out of this. And even though I know that, you know, rapping ain't his full time job, like his full time is being a fireman, you know, protecting on New York, which we're going for that. But he's still continuing doing his work in here, and I gotta say, he's been doing good in that shit. Okay, the next album. Guess what? Now it's fully time. Griselda time with the most awkward, which I was okay. I'm not so yeah yeah. It's West Side Gun with the album Hitler Wears Hermes 8 Sincerely Adolf Part 1. Damn, that's gonna be weird. Okay, I'm not surprised.
Jesus.
Yeah, I'm not like okay. Like I'm not surprised Siri had all the projects named this. Although I'm not gonna go why he named it, because like I'm not gonna do that shit. But it's the eight project of this shit. And it's been also hard to West Side Gun, because like most of his releases been mostly Conway and Benny, but now he finally released an album, and I say like most of his projects, this is more street grimy shit. From what I'm hearing this album. The main producer for here is Camouflage Monk, Conductor Williams, and Danny LaFlair in Heartbreakers. I don't know why I named that as a genius, but this is basically his more grimy street shit type of record. It always starts off with an intro, because the first track was mainly some background noise or whatever. And then this one track, Best Time, featured A Rashad, which the dude that goes on narrating most of his shit, like, like that. But yeah, like, he, like, I'm gonna say it right now, as for features, this should have been either him and Stove, and Stove Got Cooks, because he is mostly, because he is on this album a lot. Like, he on track 3, track 4, 6, 8, mostly, like, he's basically half the fucking album. Half the fucking album, like there's one track, a Vogue cover, which Westside Rhapsody took a sample of a LaVert track, which, okay, I kind of like that. They took a sample of that, I kind of sang that part too, which, okay, part two, but, there's more right tracks here. We got Start like Right Now with Stove God Cooks again. Now, I keep seeing this nigga's name, and Jadakiss, which, okay, that goes good. Wes Meyer with a Booty James, Sauce Walker, even got the three move with Claire Speck with, you know, with Billy Conway and DJ Clue. Name I ain't heard in a while. Like, damn. Also Spoons of Conway, which I thought that was good too. I say in terms of Westside Gun albums or projects, this is technically like on the verge of Fly God's Awesome God 2 and Who Made the Sunshine. It's good. Since I'm a list, there's a few select tracks I like, but I say All Right is decent. And usually I be liking Westside Gun albums a lot, like even more than Conway and Benny albums, and I like them too. Just that I think when it comes to Griselda, Benny's the best rapper, Conway's the best lyricist, Westside just like the best artist, or at least the most curator of what he does. What he does, and okay, and the curation is not bad. It's not bad. I didn't focus on tracks like this. Although I'll say, I don't know if he meant, okay, I'm thinking it's related to the, you know how people said the Devil Wears Prada? I know it's similar to what he said, but it's like, I don't know, but it's like, eh. I mean, you do you, but okay. I still follow your shit though. Okay. Next up, we have King's Disease by Nas, or King's Disease 2 by Nas, the sequel to the album that won that Grammy, the one that should have put the grit. Okay, you know what? I'm not gonna get mad about that. But anyway, okay, King's Disease 2, slightly better than the first one. I can go with that. Like, I do think that. Although I will say it's not my favorite album of the year. It's just like, it's good. I mean, it is where Nas works. Like, usually we say about Nas is he can be a good rapper, he can be a good lyricist, but don't got the best ear for beats. I mean, and then he gets Hit Boy, who worked on his last album, and here's a before, you know what, Nas, you do the lyrics, I handle the beats, I'm gonna run this shit, and what he did is fine. Like, I mean, there's tracks to talk about that I think should get a highlight, like this one track, Death Row East. And if you're wondering, that sounds familiar. Like, yeah, you know, back then during the Great War of East Coast West Coast rap, right, like Death Row was trying to, Death Row, you know, the record label was trying to expand to New York and all that shit. Yeah, and in case you have to remember, that didn't happen because of reasons. And it's a decent track. And now we get to, and then the track's like EPMD 2. Oh, and by the way, in case you're wondering, yeah, EPMD, that's the first track he did back February on the Jews and Black Messiah soundtrack, him and Hit Boy. And now it's a sequel to that, featuring the actual EPMD, that, you know, that's your duo, and Eminem. Yeah, and that track, that was okay. I mean, that's the EPMD spits and bars, and those are good bars, and Eminem first wasn't too pissy, thank God for that. I mean, he he rap fast a lot. He does, you know, rapping fast a lot, but it's like, I mean, it's not as cringy or annoying as the other shit he's been doing, but he's there. Is there? Yeah, okay, and he was getting a song featured Lauryn Hill, and it's good. And I think she even jokes about herself being late in the comes, which I guess she gets now, okay, so like a reunion of what do you do with Chuck when I ruled the world back in 94, 95 and shit. But that chick is decent too. That was season two. Like you do get some weird collaborations here and there. Like you get one collaboration, YKTV with A Boogie with a Hoodie and YG, which that's a weird combination, but okay. I mean, it works. I mean, he also get one track with Charlie Wilson. So it was 104 and one, but that track bangs. And that go hard too. That track is go good. But yeah, I can fuck with that track. I don't much to say, but it's like this. The album is okay. Like I wasn't really a big fan of the first King Disease. Second one slightly better, but still, I wouldn't put it as high on my list of albums to go back to. Like it's decent, but it's like you'd be like what, like a 7 or 6 or something. Okay, all right, and now another album that Danny talked about. So remember in Adult Swim Singles program, we talked about this one rapper, Pink Sifu, who had us before during on a single, and I talked about him before on the Adult on one of the Alchemist's EP on every a couple months back. Well, we got a new album out, which is called Gumbo. Huh. And I'll say this, Gumbo is my title for the album because thinking about it, like the Gumbo, like also things like, you know, you got shrimp, sausage, some peppers, all that shit. I should say it's sort of candy because that's what this album is in a nutshell. Like it's basically a bunch of different sounds, different shit coming from this guy, which is like a different type of sound you're giving. Like some work, some don't. You get something that the hook. You get something that's like, okay, what the hell? You're like, what the hell? Like, okay, like it's no surprise that the track I like on this album is basically the one featured the Alchemist or produced by him. So that's a no brainer. That's a no-brainer. Like, star, right, though. Like, you do, like, and he got a whole bunch of features of motherfuckers I don't know, or at least one I don't recognize, because you got people, like, the people I recognize, like, Georgia and Mildred, Lynn Skywalker, Maxo, No Cream, and then my other motherfuckers down, like, who are y'all again? Some motherfucker named Baby Mama, B Kool-Aid, Big Rube, Coco O, Nelson Mandela, like a whole bunch of motherfuckers, VCR, and Von Beasy. I'll say this, like, it's interesting to get more on this guy. Like I say, it's more of a mixed bag. Okay, like I say, it's like Halloween candy. It's like, I like this one. No, keep that shit. but that's not to say it's all bad. I have a very mixed attitude. It's an alright album. It's long as fuck. It's long as fuck. Like, I think it's like an hour or something. Okay, maybe not long. I mean, it ain't no fucking Donda, but yeah. This album we got from him is pretty alright, I guess. This one, keep it really, really short. Been the Butcher got a new EP out. Paris Picasso. It's Been the Butcher EP.
Oh shit, that did happen.
It's a Been the Butcher EP. What do you expect? Like. Look, the EP is fine for what it is. Like, if you, like, I'm gonna say right now, at this point, you know what he raps about, you know what he goes on about, you know what he be saying is rapping. So I gotta explain shit to you. You know, you know how it goes. It's basically shit he does on these streets. I mean, it's fine. I like a couple checks on it, but it's nothing, you know, different you hear from, like, it's cool, it's fine. And last two tracks, I'm gonna give mostly little detail since I think Rob might have more detail on it from as far as I know. Lingua Innata, Sinner Get Ready. Holy shit. Okay, I like how it goes about, I'm gonna say right now, like, I live in the South. Sometimes talking about religion bothers me when people use it to be an asshole, but when they use it to, you know, explore how much of a, how much of an asshole you are, like, I think I heard that I'm like, on last track, that one woman, they got to come from CNN and said, I got the bullets you taking from COVID. Oh boy. And then I think I get the context of how people use Christianity as some sort of masking yourself, you mean an asshole to Christianity or that type of shit. But the way it's so intense, holy shit, the way you said, I don't give a fuck. Like, oh shit, I'm gonna call alone. But yeah, I've already done this album a lot. And the last one we got is Sturgill Simpson, The Ballad of Dude and Juanita. Now again, usually bluegrass is not my thing, and I gotta say, I will say I do appreciate what he did here. Like, usually, like, it's like, even though I'm not really into the genre, I appreciate the storytelling. I appreciate what they're doing, what he does here. Like, okay, and see, got wait. Also, as you know, as somebody in there, which, all right, is he gonna balance shit, which I can respect. Like, I can respect. Like, I can respect Simpson do something outside his box, even though I think the second time he's doing some bluegrass shit. Although I think it's more ballady, like, you know, he's doing some stuff like, hey, tell you about dude, this man named Dude and One Need, like, I don't know how it goes, blah, 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 from memory, but this one, I say, you know what, if you're looking at something more different outside of your box, it's worth checking out, you can check it out. And that is it. That is all my albums I talk about, because that's all I listen to.
All right. Good to know. Now, time for me to round things out here with the albums that I listen to. Starting right up at the top with my first handful of top picks here. So, since we've mentioned that in the impending couple of months, we're going to be getting a huge wash of albums that'll, you know, make year-end lists difficult, let's talk about one of those upcoming albums for a second, that being the new Whitechapel project. Having to follow up on The Valley from a few years back, The Valley being an album that took the already established deathcore formula of their sound and managed to grow it while, you know, making the lyrical subject matter much, much bleaker than normal somehow, while adding in a great deal of compositional nuance. The project I'm about to talk about here is as far literal opposite of that as you can imagine, and that is the new Lorna Shore EP and I Return to Nothingness. Just three tracks, 15 minutes of pure, full-on, batshit insanity. But first, a little bit of context. The band's been in a weird place with an unstable lineup since about 2017 after the release of Flesh Coffin. Their founding vocalist Tom Barber left shortly after in 2018 to join Chelsea Grin. Then they were joined for a year by a guy named C.G. McCreary, who got the boot in 2019 due to, well, allegations of sexual assault. Not terribly a fun time. Granted, his vocals were still used on their 2020 album Immortal, but eventually they did find a replacement vocalist, now being fronted by Will Ramos, being featured on this new EP. Which, you know, that's the weird thing. Like, honestly, I've seen Lorna Shore live, not entirely of my own volition. I heard their albums before. They were alright, but not really special in any kind of way. They were just, like, very straightforward deathcore. And then they put out this coke-fueled mess. But, okay, when I say mess, I mean that in a good way. This thing is just almost, like, proudly over the top. Like, you have the opener, like, To the Hellfire, which has this ominous acoustic melody leading straight into a howling assault of blasts and double kicks in this kind of nightmarish, hell-fueled, post-apocalyptic fashion, with some of the most over-the-top breakdowns you've heard in this genre in a while, vocals growling and screeching all across in this, like, gloriously over-the-top fashion, and just the production saturating every nook and cranny with all that nice, chuggy, full, hellish goodness. The middle track of The Abyss continues it with this very manic, over-the-top explosion of drums, plenty of, you know, shredding leads halfway through, quickly leading into this kind of brutally slow breakdown, and just, again, it's a roller coaster ride of just wild, intense manicness. Then, of course, there's the closing title track to offer one last bit of, you know, the fun kind of deathcore wackiness, layering more of symphonic keys, tons of noodly leads over top, layers of hellish screams, shouts, walls of double kick and blast beats. This EP is basically an everything including the kitchen sink kind of approach. It's just full on all at once. It slams the gas, starts at 100 miles per hour, and never lets up. So that's probably going to really test some people's patience. Like, if you don't like your music very over the top in this sense, this definitely ain't for you. But as someone who likes it when music just goes really over the top, this is absolutely doing it for me. Now we have to wonder how they can hold up something like this on a full-length album, whenever the hell that happens. Anyway, moving on to the next year. So, yeah, gonna be delving some more quick opinions on that new Ginger album, Wallflowers. Been building up quite a bit of hype over the past decade or so across three albums now on four. It's got a strong opening right out of the gate with the track Call Me a Symbol, with those meaty, intricate metalcore guitar rhythms, nice drum grooves mixed with thrashy blast beats, and of course, Tatiana's gnarlingly vicious vocal delivery throughout, as well as the nice cleans she adds to the melodically dense back half of the song. Colossus kind of backs off some of the speedier vibes with triplet groovage while having the steady halftime tempo, and then of course switching to deep beats and syncopations in the chorus and all that, with lots of ripping fast tremolos towards the end. You get a bit more of a relaxed rhythmic progression in the opening moments of Vortex, with clean guitar melodies and these very intricate but softly mixed and played drum rhythms with tons of intricacy before the halftime grooves kick in. And I really dig the sticking pattern here with the way the ride accentuates different parts of the measures and everything. Copycat has some nice chuggy energy driving it in the first minute or so, and of course whipping out plenty of thrashy tempos all around and a relatively steady chorus to help balance things out. Then you have the title track, which definitely feels like it starts off as possibly the most metal radio friendly of the songs, if you had to put a label to it like that. It's got a good minute or so of melodic buildup before building into very slow, steady, but still very catchy set of chugs. You could say the same thing about the track Disclosure, which is a very kind of hooky sort of metal song in the instrumentation of vocals before evolving into somewhat denser rhythms and harsher vocals. What aids this album thoroughly is the very, very fine production. Mainly like in stuff like how the snares have a very nice cracking sound to them without sounding too obnoxiously pitchy, Tatiana's vocals filling out the mix nicely whether she's screaming or singing, and the guitar tones on this are some of the most satisfying I've heard on a metal record all year. It's got the right amount of saturated heft and crunch when chugging the chords, as well as a nice sharpness when it's playing those more intricate melodies, whether it be distorted or in the more clean segments. And of course, the songwriting has that right balance of nice catchiness and technicality all across to really bring it all together in a very satisfying musical package. Yeah, if you're still sleeping on Ginger, don't sleep on Ginger, you know? Stop that. Go listen to Ginger. So, now moving on to the next project here. A nice hearty dose of existential horror. So, following up the compellingly emotional bleakness of 2019's Caligula, Lingua Ignota returns with a new project, Sinner Get Ready, with lyrical themes that focus more on a mix of things like spiritual retribution and being overwhelmingly influenced by sort of the general history of the Pennsylvanian countryside where the album was recorded. I mean, it opens up on a track, The Order of Spiritual Virgins, built around her strongly operatic vocals and haunting piano melodies drifting throughout the track, that towards the back half are suddenly cut off by more distorted, just punctuated slams of the keys, with the lyrics being in reference to this defunct religious community in Philadelphia called the Ephrata Cloister, which was of course heavily built around repression of sexuality because, well, cult. Then of course you have I Who Bend the Tall Grasses with lots of rattling chains mixed amongst a church organ with Hader's vocals veering from haughty wails and more growling aggressive spoken word parts, shouting lyrics of violent religious retribution, apparently based on a poem written by the late wife of a friend of hers. Then you get into the track Many Hands, which starts off on a musical callback to the album All Bitches Die, while also being a track full of these frayed sort of string instrumentations and lots of metallic clanking, very little in the way of a proper clear rhythm or formal structure, feeling more like you're just taking this uncomfortable walk through the Pennsylvanian countryside and you're just letting the natural ambiance of it all kind of, well, freak you out basically. Speaking of which, Repent Now, Confess Now continues the use of countryside string instrumentation like banjos, alongside an uncomfortable song that was heavily inspired by a surgery that Kristen Hader had to get for what was apparently an extremely badly herniated disc, one that, per her own words, apparently threatened total loss of her lower body. That doesn't sound like fun. Quite the opposite, in fact. Then we have the track The Sacred Lineament of Justice with a lot of squealing wagon wheels and more clattering metal and an extremely uncomfortably long dose of bagpipes that at one point plays this sample of an evangelist named Jimmy Swaggart confessing to all kinds of sins, mainly after he got busted having an affinity for prostitutes. Probably not the kind of thing that a man of God should be doing, but I mean, are you really surprised by this point? I'm not.
Are you shocked?
Not that shocked. Then, of course, one of the previously released singles, Perpetual Flame of Centralia, written about a ghost town in Pennsylvania that has apparently been experiencing an underground coal mine fire since about 1962. And I mean, like, it's still going on. Like, as we're recording this, that fire is definitely still burning. Like, it got so bad that the population literally reduced from about 1,500 at, you know, the start of the fire in 62 to just 5 people as of 2017. And I don't even know how many people are still in that town now, if anyone. Like, 5 people, that's basically a whole family. That's my one hand.
Yeah.
I can count this population on one hand. Holy shit.
If you want to learn more about that, go look at the Bright Sun Films Abandoned episode on Centralia. It's startling.
Yeah, and the sound of the song definitely represents the very desolate, lonely state of the city as it stands now. Very haunting, with minimal piano and only about 8 lines of lyrics total. Yeah, this is, as once again, this is no walk in the park. This album is bleak as shit, consistently using very, like, dramatic, over-the-top lyricism that is simultaneously married to very, very real subject matter, both in Hader's personal life and just the broader scope of, you know, organized religion and cults and whatever the fuck is going on in Pennsylvania. Seriously, that place sounds like a fucking nightmare. But, yeah, it's basically dark and compelling in ways that are extremely engaging in a very dark sort of way. It knows how to make it work. That's what makes Lingua Ignota so great. And remind me, this was another perfect 10 from Yellow Flannel Guy, right?
Yes, it was.
Exactly. Now we finally have more number 10s. I'm just saying, that the dude knows what he's talking about. Now, for the last of these projects here, probably my most anticipated of the whole month. Yeah, motherfucking Colors 2. Holy shit, of all the goddamn albums. So, their latest studio effort, following up on the double release of Automata's 1 and 2 a few years back. You know, good thing they're promoting it in the middle of a tour, which, by the way, bad news. Apparently one of their members got a breakthrough case.
Yeah, Dan, but he actually did something kind of cool. He recorded all of his bass and keyboard parts to play for the remaining shows while he's recuperating.
Yeah, and apparently he caught it in Florida, which is...
It's always Florida.
Anytime something bad happens, if you look far enough along the chain of events, it's probably Florida. God damn it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, now here we are, formally able to celebrate the, you know, sequel to Mike Portnoy's favorite album of 2007. And, yeah, it definitely opens up in very familiar territory as a you know, musical parallel. Monochrome having that very sort of prog ballad keyboard thing going on, with, of course, a full heavy band playing against this twinkling soundscape. As it segues heavier and heavier, going from that to the double helix of Extinction, which opens with some nice, finely aged-like wine, mid-2000s prog metalcore energy. From the blast beats to the nice distorted chugs and D-beats, tons of pinch harmonics in the guitars and the super harsh vocals. This is that good 2000 shit. That good 2000 shit. Of course, the weird progginess underlying it with a lot of the, you know, eccentric percussion in the middle, the split second MLG air horns, you know, the horns, the ones, that weird ethereal psychedelic bridge and all that good stuff. Then, of course, you have, you know, the singles like Revolution and Limbo and Fix the Error, the former, you know, having some of those light jazz fusion elements mashed up against more energetic metalcore, while Fix the Error is still more like, basically straight up like a prog punk sort of jam, with just that consistent driving D-beat energy, and of course the four whole drum solos, and still one of the best music videos of the year. That is...
Yeah, I think they mentioned they were trying to make what if a gospel track was metal, which it sounds good.
Very A+ indeed. Then, of course, there are the super long tracks here, of which there's a couple. Of course, Never Seen Future Shock, which has a lot of contrasting between heavier, you know, riffs and melodic guitar noodling with a lot of the synth work and that weird kind of, you know, almost Renaissance Fair-ish bridge happening at that one part. The momentum and progression is pretty wild. Tons of synths and sirens wailing. Lots of warbled, over-the-top, you know, blast beats and shouts. The melodic bridges in the second half really work well to help offset everything and have, you know, a nice balance while feeling suitably proggy. With a few dashes of, like, 80s drum machine in there for good measure. Stare Into the Abyss is a nice ballad, you know, a straightforward 3-minute track to sort of offset the complexities of the preceding one for the most part. You know, letting the last minute or so ramp up into the track Prehistory, which throws quite a bit at the wall. This is one of the more deliberately weird ones, with the psychedelic bass soloing, the ragtime bridge overdosed with all kinds of, you know, old school cartoon sound effects. Then you get a more typical mix of intense and melodic on Bad Habits, quickly segueing into The Future Is Behind Us, another exceptionally strange one with a lot of heavily syncopated guitar and bass rhythm, with, you know, those little insertions of more high-pitched chords in there. All the weird, strange synthesizers throughout. That, of course, bridge with the computerized, almost like 90s PC sound effects, and, yeah, that fucking Yellow song, the oh yeah, chica-chica. And Tommy's vocal delivery being plenty eccentric, you know, as you would expect throughout the whole album. He's got, you know, the usual growls, the big, you know, soaring ballad melodic vocals, and of course just whatever weird vocal tones and inflections and sound effects they were able to throw on him in the studio, because it's PT Bam, they can do whatever they want at this point. Of course, you have the song segueing into Turbulent to continue the synth melody motif from that track. Guitars locked firmly in rhythm, with, you know, the drums having a bit of off-rhythm syncopation in the snare placements, before continuing in a more soaring, gorgeous direction for most of the song's run. Save for a lot of the nutty drum rhythms that Blake is playing throughout. I mean, yeah, this is definitely the most heavy that they've gotten in a while. Like, it's a bit less heavy than something like Parallax, but it definitely goes far beyond what Coma Ecliptic and even the Automata albums were. This is absolutely a Colors 2 in every sense of the word. Like, I think they said that album when they wrote it was sort of like a make it or break it, like, musical statement of purpose and declaration. And it definitely feels like, after all the shit that happened in recent years, this is a very similar line to that. This is another, like, you know, statement of purpose about what they're here to do. And they do it fucking great enough, so hell yeah. Colors 2. Now we have the top picks out of the way, so we're going to delve into the quick round stuff, starting with one that I left off of the list proper, that being Ghost with Rites of Love and Reverence. Keep in mind that's Ghost without an H. So, much like fellow synthwave, you know, star Perturbator, it appears that Ghost, with his recent output, is veering somewhat more into a hybridization of, you know, synthwave, goth rock, and post-punk elements, while still trying to have more of that very heavy, saturated, straight-up synthwave metal kind of sound, with, you know, balancing that against the more gothic songwriting and much more vocally-centric music. I don't necessarily think it pulls it off as well as Perturbator does. I think this album, it's good, but I think they still need to work out the kinks in terms of, like, how to balance all these particular ideas together. But it's solid enough for what it is. Sturgill Simpson, The Ballad of Dude and Juanita. I guess it's bluegrass? I don't know a damn thing about bluegrass, so I'm not sure what to say other than it's Sturgill Simpson doing bluegrass. Sounds fine enough. Of course, we had the newest album from Lord with Solar Power, and it seems like people were a bit, like, not sure what to make of this one, mostly because it's a much, well, as kind of we got the vibe from the singles, a relatively brighter affair than what Melodrama was, because that one was a very, you know, personal album dealing with a lot of shit, and this one, it's got a lot of, focuses on a lot of, like, acoustic songs, sort of more folk-laden kind of tracks, dealing with more, you know, brighter tones and just trying to live life as she sees fit. It's much happier than you would expect, possibly due to the fact that, I don't know, she comes from New Zealand, the one country that kind of had their shit together in regards to gestures vaguely at the last 18 months. I mean, if you were living in that country, wouldn't you be writing music about how happy and cool your life was? You know, save for the couple tracks where she delves into her own, there's still a little bit of personal anxiety in here. Like, you know, stoned at the nail salon, having to deal with settling into a normal life once you've spent however many years going on tours and stuff like that. But, you know, I like it for what it is. I'll admit it's not Melodrama good, but it's not really going for, like, Melodrama Part 2, you know? Anyway, the new Turnstile project, Glow On. Never really been a fan of this band, but in recent years I've kind of stopped being salty about them or anything. They have their place as a fine enough gateway band into the hardcore genre, and for this album, while it still delivers the same kind of in-your-face sort of skater punk energy as any other releases of theirs up to now, this one definitely attempts to widen their sound with elements of shoegaze and dream pop, as you no doubt could tell from the two guest features from Blood Orange on this project. And shit, there's even a touch or two of Brazilian samba in spots. So, yeah, definitely trying to prove that they're not just like a one-trick pony or anything. I'm curious how the broader fan, like the actual hardcore Turnstile fans will respond, but I mean, it's fine, I guess. Then, of course, last of the quick rounds would be churches with screen violence. Having followed them since about their first or second album or so, a lot of it is definitely more, like, in very expected synth-laden dream pop territory for them. But there's definitely an attempt to widen things up just a bit, specifically towards how the back half of the album features more prominent natural instrumentation, like most notably in the single How Not to Drown, featuring Robert Smith of The Cure, that definitely helps bring something interesting in terms of expanding the dream pop vibes to more shoegaze elements, and even giving a certain sort of weightiness to the music. Not like super, super heavy, but definitely giving a sort of sonic grounding so that it's not as strictly ethereal. And hey, I wouldn't mind hearing more Robert Smith and Churches. They actually work pretty well together, not gonna lie. Then, with that out of the way, there is my one lowlight here, which is, surprise, surprise, the guys in Death Heaven with Infinite Granite. Look, I realize that there's probably a lot of contention to be had with the band in general, whether you're one of those people that are like, oh, they're not true black metal, or, oh, look at them, black metal and shoegaze, now they're going full-on shoegaze, like every other heavy band does these days. Seriously, that's actually kind of a weird thing. You ever notice how, like, just how many heavy bands in, like, the past five or ten years eventually sort of go into full-on shoegaze territory? Like, why shoegaze specifically? I don't entirely understand. But anyway, and then of course there's me who doesn't care about, oh, true black metal or not. I've just never really liked Death Heaven in general. This album doesn't really change that. It's just, wow, they kind of got rid of a lot of the heavier parts of their sound and are full-on shoegaze now, which, I mean, fine, I guess. It probably works for some people, but not really for me, especially considering, and it didn't click for me until recently, specifically seeing Dead End Hip Hop's Mike Seatown tweeting about this, but if you look at where Death Heaven's career path and style has gone up to now, they're basically following the same path as the band Alcest, who were doing the whole post-black metal thing a good while before Death Heaven even ever came around in the first place. For context, I'm pretty sure Death Heaven started in, like, their first album in 2011, and Alcest had at least two albums out before then. And honestly, I could just listen to Alcest. That's probably my biggest problem I realized with Death Heaven in the broader scope of the whole current metal and rock scene. Like, there's always those one or two bands that are just doing their stuff better, and it kind of makes Death Heaven feel really pointless. Like I said, there's at least six friggin' Alcest albums I could listen to that, you know, do this style a whole lot better, including one that, I shit you not, is inspired by the film Princess Mononoke. Think about that for a second. Is Death Heaven ever going to give you an album inspired by Miyazaki? I don't think so. I mean, they might, but I doubt it. So, yeah, there's not much to say directly about the album itself other than it exists and Death Heaven going full shoegaze. Take it as you will. But, yeah, that's basically the last of the albums I had to talk about here, which pretty much means we are now fully done, finally, with this most recent album roundup. If you haven't noticed by now, as always, there will be a link to a Spotify playlist featuring our, you know, favorite picks from our favorite albums in the description of this, so you can sample for yourself and decide what catches your attention and what doesn't. We're obviously putting in the ones we recommend, not, like, the shitty ones or anything. But, yeah, of course, you know where to find us. At Surreal Reso on Twitter, like us on Facebook, SurrealResolution.com. Be sure to, you know, email me, robert@surrealresolution.com, for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Shout out to producer Mr. E for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his stuff down in the description. And of course, remember to subscribe to this podcast on Google Podcast, iTunes, and Spotify. That'll about do it for this month. We'll of course be back, you know, with our usual weekly business, and some point next month with the album roundup for September, which totally won't feature a bunch of fanboying over Rivers of Nile.
Or Spirit Box, or Lil Nas X, or, oh my god, there's just so much stuff going on here. Oh my god!
The saturation is real, and, yeah, that's gonna be fun. So, yeah, keep an ear out for that next month, and, until next time, seriously, Nikki, what the fuck?